Thank you, Steve. Hi, everybody. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy. Welcome to the show. It's the middle of the week. Enjoy yourselves. Sit back, relax, and listen. We're at 312-981-7200.
What if you're driving? Should you sit back?
Yeah, you should still.
One day soon.
Yeah. Did you ever meet somebody and they just have an energy that you admire and you say to yourself, this person is different than the rest of us. There's something going on with this person and it's really, really working.
Yep.
Have you met somebody like that? Who was it for you? Or maybe it's happened many times.
It has happened many times, but just this morning, Ernie from production.
Ernie from production. How come?
He's just, Jasmine, I was just telling you, I love Ernie. Ernie has a lot of energy.
Yes, he does.
I need to rub up against him and get some of that energy.
That would be a problem with HR, but feel free. Oh. You feel free to do what you need to do.
She was collecting energy.
Right. You could use that.
Have you ever seen Ernie bummed out?
I don't know that I have.
I know.
He's always just in a very positive.
It's a new goal.
I'm sure you can bum him out.
I felt that way yesterday when Connie Payton was in the studio. Payton's wife was in the studio. I had heard such good things about her forever. I never got the chance to meet her. And yesterday, as soon as the door opened and she came in, the room felt different.
And Jarrett's like that, too.
Yes, he is.
Totally, 100%. Absolutely. Best hugger ever. She has to hug me. Did you hear that? She said, can I hug you?
Yeah.
You're cool.
Yeah.
That's what she said.
Right.
I'm like, all right, bring it in.
Form a line. Yes.
She's adorable. She's nice. She's sweet. We were talking about her swim school that she and Andre Dawson put together, the Little Otters Swim School.
Right.
And thankfully, you said, we've got to talk, Walter, before you leave. And I'm so glad you did.
I'm not kidding. I had 1,000 questions that I could have asked her about Walter Payton because, really, I think you could argue this if you wanted to, but I think he's the best football player of all time. I really, really do. And to watch him all those years, there were years, she even referenced this, there were years for the Bears where that was their entire offensive game book was give the ball to Walter, and then the next play was give the ball to Walter, and then the next play was give the... That's all they had. And then they became the Super Bears, the 1985, you know, the Championship Bears, and he was a part of that, but I don't know how much you remember about that game against the Patriots. Every single member of the Bears team, past, present, and future, scored a touchdown in that game, except for Walter Payton. And it was sad, as great as it was for the Bears to be the champions. I'm watching the game going, at some point, you have to let Walter Payton score a touchdown.
And the game had to feel like they could have decided to do it.
Oh, yeah.
Well, can I just ask a stupid question? Why didn't they?
I don't know the answer to that.
The refrigerator scored a touchdown.
Yes, he did.
I remember that.
William Perry scored a touchdown.
I just remember Walter running with his knees so high and the smile on his face. He made it look so effortless. It's like he glided down the field.
Right, right.
But, I mean, just because everybody assumed everyone would think Walter would get the ball. I mean, I don't understand.
It doesn't make sense because really they were scoring at will. They blew the Patriots out. It wasn't even close. And as the game went on, everybody was getting a chance to score. And you go, well, at some point they're going to let him score a touchdown.
Like the last one of the game or something.
It just didn't happen.
When Virginia scored,
Virginia McCaskey scored and then ran she got a 2-point play after
that. I'm going as fast as I can.
And a credit to him at what a gentleman Walter Payton was for years when they would ask, whenever anyone would ask him that question, Walter, did you feel bad you didn't get a chance? He'd say, no, it's a team sport. It's a team effort. I didn't feel bad. Our team won. We were the champions. But I would say to myself, but you're Walter Payton. You deserve to score.
Well, you heard Connie's answer yesterday when you said, was Walter upset? She said, yes, but I didn't know right away.
Right.
He kept it hidden. He put the, best foot forward.
Yes, yes.
But you knew he couldn't have liked that.
It's so strange. Whenever you would see footage of him in training, like he wouldn't just train on a flat surface. He would train on a hill. Like he would train going up hills all the time. Or he would strap stuff to his body to make it harder for him to advance, you know? I don't know how you cannot admire that sort of work ethic. And then on top of that, he was such a good guy, such a complete human being. And then you say to yourself, well, who could be a mate for somebody who's that perfect? And we found out yesterday. She walked into the room, and the room changed when she walked in. You just went, wow, she's got this incredible gravity to her that everybody just doesn't have. It's amazing.
She is, and she's beautiful.
Yeah.
And Dave Ennett wants to talk about Connie Payton and or Walter Payton.
Dave, hello.
Hi. Well, just
are you going to answer the why?
Well, I don't know that there's a great answer for the why, except that it was the game plan the Bears had. And Mike Ditka has said in the years since that he regrets not giving the ball to Walter Payton on the goal line, letting him score a touchdown.
Yeah.
But the fact is that the Patriots were keying on him, and it was creating openings for other guys. They still, I think to this day, everyone who watched that game realizes they should have figured out a way to let Payton score a touchdown in that game.
Hindsight is far greater.
Oh, yeah. But how about just a testament to him being Walter Payton? Whenever he was asked about it, he would play it down like it's no big deal.
He played it down, but it clearly bothered him.
Yeah.
And Dick has said that initially he asked him about it and Payton downplayed it, but he could tell that it did bother him.
Sure.
And he said, you know, he doesn't think he ever really got over it, you know, which is really a shame.
Yeah, I know you've met Connie Payton on several occasions.
Sure.
Am I right? Isn't there this weird kinetic energy that just surrounds her?
Yeah, absolutely. I think probably to have been married to Walter Payton, I think you'd have to have some of that rub off on you.
Right. But she doesn't fade into the background like a lot of people. If you're married to somebody who's of that caliber, they just kind of evaporate into the background. She doesn't do that.
You know, she stayed very active, and you look at her kids, too.
Yeah,
they're great.
Burgeoning media stars.
Right.
And
absolutely.
With young families, so it's pretty cool.
Yep. Well, thank you for your expertise.
Is it true he would walk the length of the football field on his hands? That's what somebody has texted.
I never saw him do it, but I don't doubt that he could.
And someone else has texted, Walter Payton used to run up the ski hill at Four Lakes in Lyle all the time.
Well, he ran, his hill running is famous.
It's legendary.
That's what he did to train. And if you think about that, if you ever saw from time to time, different TV stations would do reports on it. They'd take a camera out there and show him running the hill, and it would be on the hottest day, and he'd be out there. And that's what made him the best of his era.
And, Wendy, if you've never seen it,
all time.
It's a steep hill. It's not like this gradual.
It's straight up, pretty much.
Yeah, and you say, well, you don't have to do. You could just do this on a flat surface, but that's not the way he operated.
No, it wasn't.
Wow. Yeah. Thank you, Dave. I appreciate it.
Let's go run a hill.
Let's go run a hill. Dave and I are going to run a hill, Wendy. Close it out.
I will fall down the hill with a bucket of water.
Perfect. All right. We have more show ahead. Thanks, Dave. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. I didn't think we'd hear the phrase drool infested at any point during today's show, but I was wrong.
Well, I love the MyPillow because they're washable. I'm telling you, every once in a while, you've got to wash your pillows, if I may just say that.
Drool infestation. I bought a pillow from a different company years ago that came pre-drooled. I didn't even have to drool on it. It made my life so much easier.
The drooly pillow.
The drooly pillow. Yeah, those didn't sell well.
My backyard is completely underwater. I now know what it's like to have a swimming pool.
Oh, is it that bad?
And I realized if we didn't get our basement permasealed,
it'd be worse.
All that water would be in our basement.
Yes.
Just the poor dog this morning. He was like ankle deep in water and still did his business.
Oh.
Good Kona.
Oh.
Had to grab it before it floated away.
Wow.
It is so wet out there. And then I was worried because it was supposed to rain throughout the whole night, but then
they
was canceled.
It, thankfully.
But I was hearing Mary all morning. Glen Ellen is pretty flooded, and Palos or Orland.
Yeah, Orland's looks like, really bad.
Looks like Sea Hunt. Lloyd Bridges was out early this morning filming episodes for Sea
Hunt.
Does
he always talk like
yes,
this?
Yes, he does.
You know who else talks like this?
Who?
Ann Compton.
Ann Compton and Lloyd Bridges have the same voice. She actually filled in for him on Sea Hunt for 3 episodes and nobody knew.
I'm Ann Compton. Doesn't she sound like that?
A manta ray came at me from behind when I wasn't looking.
Wendy, do you know who Barbara Corcoran is? Does that name ring a bell with you?
I don't know.
You might know her from. She's an entrepreneur, and she's one of the sharks on Shark Tank. She's not on every week, but she's a frequent shark on Shark Tank.
She was on Dancing with the Stars.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that, Mary. Thank you. Yes, she
was.
Wow.
Business and dancing.
Business and dancing.
Much
business
like you.
In the front, dancing in the back.
The human mullet.
Yes.
Do you watch Shark Tank on a regular basis?
Not on a regular basis, but if it's on, I will watch. I do enjoy it.
I didn't realize how much I enjoyed it. I haven't made it a habit yet, but every time I turn it on, I'm really intrigued by that.
It is pretty good. It's a pretty good show.
She is turning 70. Barbara Corcoran is turning 70. So what best way to celebrate your 70th birthday than by throwing yourself a funeral? On Monday, the entrepreneur posted a photo to Instagram showing her lying in a coffin in a red dress. Next to her, a cardboard cutout of herself dressed as a nun. Meanwhile, flowers lined the top of the coffin and floral arrangements were accompanied both sides of the coffin, the casket. Page Six said that the funeral took place at Barbara's New York City penthouse, and after guests arrived, the birthday girl leapt out of a box, the casket, and began dancing around the room. I've had nightmares less scary than this.
And you've often thought that you don't like going to wakes because you're worried that the person's going to jump up and go, yes. Psych!
Yes, yes. I've also thought that it's sad that this collection of people that have known you and hopefully loved you for your entire life, they all gather together and you don't get to see it. You don't get to be a part of it. You don't get to hear all the accolades, all the kind words from the people that you've hopefully changed their lives over the years. And on several occasions, I thought they really should figure out a way like this.
That's a little extreme.
This is extreme. No, I'll give it. It is. It really is. And if you see pictures of her in the casket, you just go, ugh. But I thought, wouldn't it be better for us if society said the funeral is a thing that will be before you die? And so, I mean, a lot of times you don't know. A lot of times you just die unexpectedly.
Suddenly.
But I like the idea of being able to attend your own service. That's nice to me.
It's weird.
I know it is.
I love the show on FX called Better Things. Pamela Adlon, who does the voice of Bobby Hill on King of the Hill.
Yeah.
An episode involved this where, you know, you die, you don't get to see what people say or who comes.
Right.
So they just kind of stood around the room and said, what would give me a eulogy right now? That's
for
what
you?
They did. No. That's what they did on the show.
Oh.
And it was really interesting. Now, I would do something like that.
Did you prepare that, or was it just spur of the moment?
It was kind of spur of the moment because, quite honestly, you know, speaking from the heart, you get to know how people really feel.
Right.
It was really fascinating, and I thought next time I go to a party, I'm gonna pull out that little party trick.
Do you know who Del Close was?
Yeah.
All right. For people who don't know, he was an actor, but he was also considered to be one of the masters of improvisation. He's had thousands of people who studied under him. He found out that he did not have long to live, and he said essentially the same exact thing. And so they held his funeral with him in attendance. He had not died yet. He attended the funeral.
I'd expect that from him.
Yeah.
Didn't they use his skull at the Goodman for a while?
So that's a story, Steve, that was famous for quite a while, but now people have come back and disproved that ever happened.
Well, I want to believe that it did. It
makes sense, because you go, just because a guy dies doesn't mean he can't still be in a production of something. So, yeah, that was that Alas Per Yorick speech, that it was his skull that was held up. But now other people have come forward and said, no, that was just a publicity stunt, that never, ever happened. But I'm with you. It makes for a better story if it did happen. So let's pretend it did. So what do you think? If you had an opportunity to do something like this, you would go for it or you would not go for it?
I would not go for
it.
No?
Just it's a little too eerie for you?
Well, it's a little self-serving, isn't it?
Yeah, extremely self-serving. But what are the first three letters of funeral, Wendy?
Fun.
Fun. So let's put the fun back in funeral. Where it belongs.
I've been seeing these commercials, and I believe John Williams tells you about it. Dignity, funeral, I don't know the exact thing, but I saw the commercials.
What's that? I was telling you
about this off the air. You can plan a funeral that is like self-serviced to you.
You pick the music?
Well, no, this goes way beyond that. Like somebody evidently was an outdoorsman. You've not seen these television commercials? Somebody loved to canoe, so they had either the coffin or the urn was in a canoe, and the pallbearers were bringing a canoe in this park-like setting. It was just such a cool, personalized way and send-off.
But wouldn't there be places like churches and synagogues and stuff that would not allow that? Wouldn't it seem too sacrilegious to bring a canoe down the main aisle?
Well, I didn't see it in the aisle. Maybe they would have the funeral at this particular park.
Oh.
So I've been thinking about that. I really love tulips. So at my funeral, I would like everyone to get a tulip bulb.
Yeah.
And then when they plant it that following fall, depending on when I die, when they look at that tulip, perhaps they would think of me.
Oh, that's very nice.
Jim,
that's
I hope you're listening, because I don't have this in writing anywhere.
I think Tiny Tim did a similar thing, didn't he? I think he did.
No.
He didn't?
But he should have.
He should have. All right, we'll take a break. We've got news for you next, and then there's a whole big show ahead. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
7 would you like to go to the World's Fair with me?
No, but I want to hear you do this voice for the rest of the show. I think that would be so good for us.
See? It
yeah.
would be very good.
Yeah. Rick Grant is here. Nobody knows more about the World's Fair than Rick, and there's a huge show, the World's Fair Show, coming up on Sunday. A return visit to the show, Rick. Nice to see you again.
Nice to see you.
It's nice to see you, Rick.
Will that bother you if Wendy talks that way?
Edward G. too the whole time?
Edward G. Robinson? Yeah, absolutely.
Where's your World's Fair now?
Steve Cochran had a question that I couldn't answer, but I know you can. Does the World's Fair still take place?
Yes, it does.
It does.
Basically, the Bureau of International Expositions approves them. They're usually held every 4 years. And I bought a huge collection a few years ago. And this guy had been to every World's Fair from 64 up. And he went in 68 to San Antonio, Texas, 67 Expo, 67,
yeah.
1970 Osaka, every 4 years.
Wow.
They've had it in South Korea. They had one in Spain in 1992. They're supposed to have one in Chicago. They're thinking about it. But
really?
They passed on it. Yeah.
Friends of the park didn't want it.
Well, you know how much they probably would have lost.
Right, I know.
Speaking of Steve Cochran, you brought up a poster that involves Steve Cochran was an actor,
yes.
not related to our Steve Cochran,
yes.
correct?
In the 40s or the 50s?
I'm not sure. He could. It could be the same
guy. So what is this poster?
It's a poster. I was digging through stacks of posters about a year ago, and I went, Steve Cochran, wow, this will be great.
And who else? Sherry Marshall? The movie is called Tell Me in the Sunlight. Where do you get all this stuff?
I've been digging it up for 40 years.
Wow.
And you have, you tell me, because I've never been to your place, is it on display? Do you have most of it on display? Or
no,
how do you do it?
It's like a museum. You know what I mean? Like 98% of it's hidden away just because there's no room. I would literally need
like a warehouse to keep it all in, right?
Yeah, to have it all displayed nicely, you know. I have a few things, you know, a couple of cases that I have stuff in and some of my bigger items.
So if the World's Fair is still going on, like there was a time where everyone in the world knew that the World's Fair was coming and they would flock to whatever city it was being held in, why is it not getting the press that it used to get?
Well, probably because you can take out your smartphone there or look on your computer and see the world, talk to someone in another world thousands of miles away, and, you know, in another country. So it's kind of, the world's kind of gotten smaller.
So progress took a bite out of them, didn't
progress
it? Kind of?
Progress took a bite out of them, yeah.
Wasn't one of the original goals was to showcase whatever product you were selling was to showcase it to the world and how it would be better if whatever you were trying to sell became a thing, right?
Well, part of the way they put together this fair is they rented exhibit space to a lot of corporations, and they had the General Motors building, the Chrysler building, and the General Motors building had a Chevrolet factory on site, so you could actually stand up above and look down at them assembling Chevy cars. Mm. And then on the dashboard, it would say, assembled at the World's Fair.
Oh,
that's
actually
pretty cool.
One of the guys that used to come to our show about 25 years ago, he had one of those Chevys at home.
Really? Were they worth more because it was assembled at the World's Fair?
Probably, but you know, I had a chance to buy it, but it's like, what am I going to do with it?
Right.
I don't know anything about old cars, and that's a little big.
All right, so the World Fair, the Chicago World's Fair, took place where and when? Right behind us?
Pretty much. It went from 12th Street, from Roosevelt time called 12th Street, down to 39th Street, along the lakefront, east of the railroad tracks, and included Soldier Field, the Field Museum, the Shedd Aquarium, the Planetarium were all included in it, so it was like a campus. And they made Northerly Island 40% bigger with more landfill, and that's also where the World Fair was held on there.
And what's remaining today that was there? Obviously the museum, I think you said the Field Museum.
Well, that was around a long time before. Those things existed before the World's Fair. The only thing that still exists in Chicago from that's in the same site is Italo Balbo and his Italian fascist Sea Armada came from Italy and landed on Lake Michigan in 1933 in July. And then 1 year later, Mussolini gave an ancient Italian marble column, and the Italian people paid to have it put next to Soldier Field and dedicated on the one-year anniversary of Balboa landing there. And Balboa Drive was 7th, was 7th Avenue or 7th Street. That was named after Italo Balbo. And
so there
is a column in, I believe it's Italian or Latin and English, saying in the 10th year or the 11th year or something like that of fascism, Mussolini gives this to the people of Chicago. I don't know why during the war it wasn't pushed into
exactly.
Right.
It's still standing?
It's still standing.
That's amazing. I got to go look for
that. Just east of Soldier Field.
As they're planning these buildings for the World's Fair, was the intent for them to just be taken down soon after, or did they hope that some of them would last a long time after the fair?
Well, they planned this in 1928 before the Depression, but once the Depression hit, they realized that, you know, and this was all done with private funds, no public monies. So they decided to make the buildings temporary because they didn't want it like the White City at 1893 where the buildings were let there except for the Art Palace, which is a museum of science and industry. That was a solid building. The other ones were just plaster and they ended up burning back then.
Yeah.
They ended up just making them. In fact, part of the deal you had when you bought a space or built a building is you had to have it removed by 1935.
Oh, really?
They had a replica of Fort Dearborn they were going to keep, but it burnt down, unfortunately.
Oh.
Can I give our number? Because a lot of times when Rick is up here, people call and say what they have. 312-981-7200. You can call us if you have any memorabilia from the Chicago World's Fair or the Chicago Columbian Exposition, right? I mean, at this memorabilia show, it's the World's Fair one, but there's memorabilia from both, correct?
Correct.
And where's that happening? That's this Sunday.
This Sunday, May 5th, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Elk Grove Holiday Inn and 1000 Bussey Road in Elk Grove Village.
All right. Admission only $7. $6 for seniors.
Perfect.
Over 64. Whew.
Yeah.
I'll pay the $7. But that's happening this Sunday,
Wendy
May 5th.
Wendy had to limbo dance in just to get the discount on that.
WorldsFairShow.com for more information.
Correct.
All right. We're going to take a break. If you have any memorabilia, feel free to call 312-981-7200. We are talking to World's Fair historian and collector and friend of the show, Rick Rann.
Is this the new Taylor Swift song?
Yes.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. Our guest is Rick Rann, World's Fair historian and collector. There's a huge show coming to Elk Grove Village on Sunday. It's at the Elk Grove Holiday Inn. It's located at 1000 Bussey Road, Route 83, and Landmeyer Road in Elk Grove Village. Admission's only $7, $6 for seniors if you're over 64. You want to go to worldsfairshow.com for all your ticket information.
And Rick, you brought some presents up for us that are there any World Fair related ones? I don't know what you gave Bill.
No, well, Disneyland or Disney World is kind of what I would, you know, is like Epcot Center is sort of like what the World's Fair was back then. You could sample different. In 1933, they only had five what they called villages, like the Belgian Village, the Black Forest, which was German, and they were so popular concessions that they had about 20 of them in 1934.
Really?
Swiss Village, Japanese Village.
Yeah. Would it have been possible if you attended this? It was like Disney. You couldn't see it all in one day,
right?
Oh, no.
You probably couldn't see it all in 2 months. I mean,
really? There was that much stuff?
How long did it run?
It went from roughly May 30th till November 11th and 33, and then it ended, and then it was going to end. But in October, it was doing so well, and they still owed money on the bonds that the gate receipts paid the bonds that helped support the fair, that they decided they're going to do it for another year. So it went from May until October 31st, Halloween.
Wow.
In 34.
And I've asked you this, but for people who don't know, you see how much stuff was built just for the World's Fair. How did they find enough people to do this? People must have come in from other cities and states, right?
Oh, yeah, they brought people from all over the world to come in here and put these again. I mean, a lot of them were like stage productions. I mean, most of the buildings didn't have heat or air conditioning because it was just going to be temporary. There were a few that had air conditioning, which was kind of new at the time, but no heat. I remember one lady came to our show a few years ago who worked there and said she froze because, you know, May on the lakefront, it can be freezing.
Yeah. All right, so temporary structures, I know they must have made a lot of money because it seemed wasted a lot of money making these structures that were just going to be knocked down.
Well, if you look at, like, I have one of the infant incubators from the outside, or the streets of Paris. From the outside, it looks like Paris. But then if you look from above, you can see it's like a stage set. The inside is just like, you know, they were just built cheaply.
Like hollowed out. What, yeah. The infant, what was this?
Incubator?
Infant incubator. See, well, live babies.
And there were live babies in there?
There were live babies. A lot of hospitals back then didn't have incubators. And they displayed them in 1904 St. Louis World's Fair.
Yeah.
Up to like the 1939 World's Fair in New York they had. And you'd pay a quarter, you could get to see babies.
Oh.
But the parents...
You wouldn't pay a quarter to see a baby?
I would have let people in my hospital room for a buck.
But anyways, a lot of these children might not have had access to incubator otherwise.
Right, sure. Yeah.
So a lot of babies probably were saved because they were able to use... All the hospitals didn't have incubators. They weren't
able to use. That is super weird, is it not?
Yeah. It makes you wonder what events they turned down. Like if they said yes to, come on in.
Well,
and
do you
see
think
a baby.
They'd have a medieval torture show?
No, did they?
No, they did.
They did.
It was on the back of the old plantation boat. It's like a paddle wheel boat. And I'm looking at the picture, medieval torture show. And out of all the tortures, that's my favorite, is a medieval, because, you know, the mid century isn't that cool.
Oh, that's excellent.
All right, I can't even imagine that. What other weird things were there?
Virgins in cellophane.
All right, this is a joke.
No, it isn't. I have a picture of the booth.
What does that mean?
It was like a peep show.
Yeah.
Virgin cellophane. It was probably women wearing cellophane.
Yeah,
that's what
and
I
that
assume.
Was it.
They had art class. You know, mostly probably men would go to the art
class.
Oh, for the naked
live model class.
Nude.
Yeah. Yes.
All right, didn't kids and families go to the World Fair?
Yeah, but some of them, I'm sure, weren't allowed on that. I mean, you've heard of Sally Rand.
Sure,
she was so popular,
dancer.
Made so much money. They had all these other little seedy, Little Egypt, like they had at 1893. I'm sure it wasn't the same lady.
Yeah. Virgins in cellophane, Wendy. We should get them on the show.
That should be a band name of someone, and if it isn't, start using it now.
So many people, Rick, have texted us with various collectibles. I don't know where to start. So you're pretty good. You don't even need to see them to be able to fairly appraise them. Is that about right?
Many of them. I mean, not everything, but...
I have photographs that my dad took of some of the expo buildings, as well as some unused admission and ticket booklets from the Columbian Exposition. Is there a ballpark on stuff like that?
The unused tickets, after the fair, the Caxton printers had a whole stack of extra tickets. They used to sell, like, I think it was a group of 15 in an envelope for like a quarter or 50 cents. But since The Devil in the White Simi came out, those have become very popular.
Oh, I bet.
So most of them are worth $20 and up. Of those unused tickets. Now, there's some that they didn't have extras of like that, like for the Ferris wheel in 1893.
Yeah.
And that can go for a couple hundred dollars.
Wasn't there supposed to be a movie version of Devil in the White City?
They turned it from a feature film into, it's going to be like on one of the paid TV
like
services.
Netflix,
like a little series, limited series.
They should reach out to Rick Rand to get some of the memorabilia for it.
I don't have an 1893. I don't have much of that. I'm waiting for the 1933 movie.
Rick, here's one. It says...
Okay.
It says, weren't there five girls called the Dions at the World's Fair as infants? These are the Dion quintuplets.
The Dion quintuplets.
But they weren't all girls, were they? Some of them were. I think there were three and two. Three girls, two boys,
I'm not sure how they broke down. But I don't think they were at 33. I think they were at maybe 35.
All girls,
Cleveland.
Oh, they were all girls?
Yeah.
Really? All right.
35.
So the deal
36.
With them was they would just set them up like in a booth and you could ask them questions.
Yeah, they were basically almost taken away from their parents, I believe.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
They had to be all girls because they were identical.
Oh, I guess so. Yeah.
All right. There are Annette and Cecile are still alive.
Really? Oh, I didn't know that. That's interesting.
84. We should try and talk to them.
Yeah. Not instead of the Virgins in Cellophane, but along with the Virgins in Cellophane.
They're coming up next hour. We arranged that for you. Penny, you have something from the World's Fair or what?
Yes, I do. Well, I think it's from the World's Fair. It's a clear 3-inch clear glass paperweight, and it's flat. And it says, there's two dates on it, 1492, which can't possibly be right.
Columbus sailed the ocean blue.
Columbian Exposition, and the other date on it is 1892. And there's a lady in the center that probably has like an eagle on her head.
You know, an eagle. Okay, that's maybe the lady who's a symbol of Chicago. That was the Columbian Exposition was planned for 1892 for the 400th anniversary of Columbus landing. That's why it's called the Columbian Exposition.
Oh. Yeah.
Okay.
And
why would a lady with an eagle on her head be considered the symbol of Chicago? Did that happen a lot?
It's a crest. No, there's a woman like that. They always show her on the poster. It says "I will." I don't know her official title, Lady Liberty, or I have a statue of her that probably from around that era.
But the
paperweight's probably worth, if it's in nice condition, at least $50. I would believe.
Not bad, Penny.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you, Penny.
Now, can people bring things? Do you purchase things? Do they purchase things?
We purchase things. We can give them an idea what it's worth. We also have probably 20. There's several dealers, and there's about 20 tables of items for sale. We also show about an hour and a half of movies
and newsreels, home movies, that would be great to watch on
videotape.
Yeah.
And we also have a display of memorabilia, so people can go around, look at the memorabilia. Sometimes people come, and if their father was a guide, sometimes people have the guide annual, and there'll be a picture of their father inside one of these.
Did people donate this film and stuff? Because I can't imagine.
I had a couple people donate the film. Other films I've just bought on 16mm over the years, because I've been collecting for about 30 years, and then we put them on videotape just to show them, you know, to show people what it looked like.
All in black and white, or has some been colorized?
There is one colorized. The Art Institute has a wonderful colorized one that was done by an architect. Unfortunately, that one's not available, but the World's Fair was super colorful.
Sure.
Pastel colors, blue, greens, yellows, pink. Just amazing.
I have a handkerchief embroidered with the World's Fair year and my great grandma's name. I would never get rid of that.
No,
that's cool.
That's cool when you have, you know, something that connected to your parents.
Rick, it's great to see you. It's always fun to talk to you. And I urge people, if you're interested in this, you can't do better than the World's Fair show. It's in Elk Grove Village this Sunday, May the 5th, starts at 10 a.m. It runs till 4 p.m. You want to go to worldsfairshow.com. All your information is there.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
It's I love hearing about the Chicago history.
It's
very cool. Thank you so much. Coming up, the stories that matter with Steve Bertrand from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All happening right here, 720 WGN.
Steve, thanks so much. It's Bill Leffin. It's Wendy Snyder. Every other Wednesday, Dr. John Duffy comes by. John, we like to say that you're our show psychologist.
Yeah, you need one, Bill.
We definitely need one. Thank you for being here. I want to start out with something that's very, very dark and very, very sad, but it needs to be discussed.
Yeah.
I'm sure you're well aware of this case, this little boy, AJ Friend, who lost his life tragically. At the hands of his parents,
it's disgusting.
It's the worst.
And
right?
It's hard to wrap our brains around, right? I mean, I think a lot of us want to look the other way because it's like, how in God's name is this even possible? How can parents be drawn to doing this?
Your every impulse is to do whatever you can to protect your child.
Yeah.
It just, something kicks in where you say, if there's danger in the area, I've got to protect my child first. So when the exact opposite happens, it doesn't make sense. But what I wanted to ask you is, he has a surviving sibling, a younger brother, and a baby on the way. Yeah, Parker's his younger brother.
Parker, yeah.
What can they possibly do with this younger child, with Parker, after his family has been through this, to make life even remotely normal? Is that even a possibility?
I think it is a possibility, but it requires a lot of TLC and therapy, but it's different therapy than we would get for our teenagers or for ourselves. This would be almost like, you know, a lot of like holding him and comforting him and teaching him a new way to think about safety.
Yeah.
Because right now, I suspect that nothing in Parker's world suggests safety.
Yes.
He doesn't even have a concept of this, right? Because everything
he's four, correct?
He's either 2, 3, or 4. I'm not sure exactly what his age is.
Yeah.
But regardless, he doesn't know what safety is. And so he has to be taught that that feeling is okay, that it is okay not to be in high alert and in crisis all the time. And the only way to do that is gradually, over time, teach him, like, you're okay. And you're okay in this moment. And you're okay in the moment following that. So it requires intensive, almost full-time, ongoing therapy for him.
And I want to mention something, too. We've had Tim Ryan on, a Man in Recovery Foundation. You know, when you're using heroin, that becomes your life, and that's all you try to do is get heroin.
Right.
He did heroin with his son. It was shocking what father in their right mind would do it. He said, I wasn't in my right mind. I get that. All you want to do is get heroin. Now, allegedly, the mom had a painkiller addiction and had done some heroin. They had found some needles, and I believe the father as well, but that's not trying to get heroin. Killing your kid, I don't see the connection there between drug addiction and being a murderer.
No, because there are an awful lot of drug addicts who do not harm their kids.
Yeah.
In this way, right? So, right. So, in my profession, I've been talking to a bunch of clinicians about this, trying to make sense of it and trying to think of, like, what would we do, you know, in a circumstance like this? And one is to do away with the very simplistic idea that there's just evil people. There's, you know, so there's just fundamentally evil people, and there's just only there's a few of them, and if you root them out, then we're okay. But I think that's overly simplistic and convenient. That, you know, that'd be great and easy, I suppose, if we could just root out the few evil people. But I think the old adage that hurt people probably applies here. Mm. Not to be a remote apologist for these people at all, because, you know, I can hardly even look at their images in the newspaper. But in all likelihood, one or both of those parents were neglected, abused when they were children. And oftentimes the way to pay that forward in the worst way is to inflict that abuse on the next generation.
And it's the mom has an 18-year-old son. More information has popped up. She had this first child when she was, I believe, 17. And her mother has been raising this now 18-year-old boy. And the mother flat out said, my daughter has a problem. She's not, you know, prepared to take care of a child. So the grandmother raised this son. He's now in college, but he's still affected by this because it's like, my mom did what?
Oh, imagine trying to make sense of this, right? You know, like that your mom was complicit. And one thing that people have been asking me, people have been saying, like, you know, well, I can understand one parent who's just kind of, you know, crazy, you know,
lost it.
Absolutely. I'm having trouble with the idea that they were complicit. They were both working together.
Right.
In situations like this, normally on inspection, we find that, you know, like there's usually a ringleader who is really seductive and charismatic and able to draw the other parent into the lifestyle of drug use and abusing the children. And like you said, Bill, a moment ago, it becomes this cycle that feels like normal in the culture of the home.
Right.
This is just this little subculture we've created, right?
John, there was a quote from AJ. As you're well aware, there were multiple instances where the police were called in, where DCFS was in the house and talking to him. And at some point, he used the phrase, maybe mommy didn't mean to hurt me.
Yeah.
Maybe someone hit me with a belt. Maybe.
Yeah.
Right.
And that was one of the doctors, I believe, when he was getting checked out for this bruise that was allegedly caused by the dog.
All right. So talk about the choice of words there, because obviously this little boy felt that this must be some mistake. Somebody who loves him that much couldn't possibly have meant that. So he's trying to be an apologist for his mother.
Absolutely. So you can feel that mechanism at work where he wants everything to be okay, right? You know, and he wants to believe mommy didn't hurt me.
Yeah.
You know, in a way, it's kind of an impressive way for a young, brutalized mind to be able to make things okay, right? She didn't mean it. So she did it, but she didn't mean it. You know, like, and I'm forever impressed with the resilience of a mind that can hold that thought in the midst of all this evidence to the contrary.
Right.
And there's been a lot of it. Like you said, Wendy, there's all this news coming out day by day that suggests that there wasn't a day in 5 years where this kid felt okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Ugh. It's just horrible.
It's a horrible story.
And something that we had discussed on our show after they had found the body, but there was a vigil prior to his body being found, and there's all these little kids. There was this little, like, four-year-old who was on the news who put his teddy bear down, and they said, what does the teddy bear mean to you? And he goes, it made me feel safe. So these little kids that are helping looking for AJ at that moment before they knew the terrible tragedy, what do you explain to those kids? I mean, what do you mean they're mommy and daddy? I mean, that has to be incomprehensible for a young child.
It is, and we're in a tough position as parents of young kids now, because it used to be we could protect them from the news of it, right? We could say, you know, AJ went away or AJ died. It's very sad. Now, even a four-year-old who, you know, our four-year-olds have iPads in their hands, you know, so they are, and they can hear what's going on. They're aware of what happened. So I would love to say we can protect our even young kids from this news. But the truth is we can't. I think you have to be honest with your kids and say, you know, well, this is what happened. What you heard is true as far as we know. Mm-hmm. And this is a rare thing. It's not going to happen to you. We're really, really sad for AJ. And you and let your kids emote.
Right.
You know what I mean? What parents want to do is short circuit the emotion of their own children.
Yeah.
And that's the last thing you want to do, as hard as it is to hear your 4-year old say, I don't feel okay. I'm worried about whether I'm okay or my friends are okay.
But John, how much of that is the parent's job to bring up, or do you just want it to be one of those cases where you let them ask questions when and if they want to?
For sure. I mean, you don't want to give them more than their little minds can handle, for sure, right?
Yeah.
So you want to tell them, given where they are developmentally, only what they can handle, mm-hmm. right? You know, and so you want to ease into it. And the best way to do it is to be curious, ask them what they know, mm-hmm. and answer the questions that they have.
Right.
Yeah.
Dr. John Duffy is here. If you have any questions or comments, 312-981-7200 is the way to do it. More ahead, Bill and Wendy, WGN. Bill Lefkowitz, it's Wendy Snyder. Dr. John Duffy is here. We're talking about the tragic, very, very sad case of AJ Friend. John, here's a text. Hey, Bill and Wendy, I live just blocks from AJ. My 5-year-old spent 3 or 4 nights believing that somebody was at her bedroom window. Very scared. Unfortunately, we had to explain the loss of little AJ to her. She was so sad. If you live nearby, if you live
right.
far away, if you're a kid and you hear that this is even a remote possibility that a child could be killed by their parents.
Yep. Yeah, when something like this happens, there's this ripple effect, and it's hard to tell what kids are going to be affected and what kids aren't. About 6 or 7 years ago, not far from where you and I live, Wendy, a child was murdered in her home. And within 2 weeks of that murder, I was working with all these kids about her age who were just afraid to be home alone because they thought, well, why wouldn't this happen to me? You know,
right.
like, how can you prove that this wouldn't happen to me? And we can talk statistics all day long and how very unlikely this is, how freaking a situation this is.
Yeah.
But that gives precious little comfort to somebody who feels like they're in a similar situation. But the best I think that parent can do is to talk to their child about, like, how AJ was in a really, really difficult situation,
yeah.
and you're not, and you're safe, but if you ever want to talk about this, you can. And that's
right.
our inclination as parents, like we were saying before the break, is to shut down as quick as we can that discussion with our kids. But if they're curious about it and they want to just talk about how they feel about it, it's important to let them let that out. Otherwise, they're going to carry it around and
right.
it may kind of generalize into some other fears as well.
Or if you shut them down, they're going to go on the internet and find out information that maybe they're not ready to know.
For sure. Yes.
Just have a conversation with your children.
Yep.
What could be done? What could be changed? What could go differently to prevent this from happening again?
So I keep in touch with kind of a network of clinicians, and every once in a while something will come along clinically that we want to talk about, and I threw this out, this whole AJ Friend situation out, is like, well, okay, what would we do in this situation? We're asking DCFS, this overtaxed agency that has, from what I understand, and having worked with them a few times, the clashing priorities of keeping families together and keeping children safe. And sometimes that works out beautifully, and sometimes, and I think in this case, might have worked out tragically.
Right.
And what we came up with was that what might be missing in the system is a psychiatric evaluation, not of the child. See, we do an awful lot of looking at the child and the conditions of the home, which is important, but of the parents. So after maybe X number of visits, and I'm not sure what that magic number is, I would imagine a DCF caseworker might be better suited to answer that, that we have some objective metric that suggests fitness of parenting, you know, fitness to take care of this child. And if that's not there, if the score isn't where it needs to be, then that child simply needs to be removed from the home.
They did parent classes, though, yep. and drug rehab, and DCFS cleared them that said they did perform these parenting classes right. And so.
Right.
But there should be a reevaluation after that as well.
There should. I mean, you know, having taught a lot of parenting classes, you can sit through virtually anything and do your time. You know, for those of us who have had moving violations, I'm among that group. I've had to sit through driver's ed classes
right.
and really, you know, really just sit through them, but not necessarily gain anything massive from them, or maybe
doesn't,
you know,
change your behavioral patterns.
Exactly. Right? You know, like there's got to be something deeper that happens here within the home, within the family. And there has to be some kind of metric that these folks can use in order to determine whether this child is going to be safe. And I think that has to do with measuring the parents and, you know, their impulse control, sociopathic tendencies, drug use and abuse, like we're talking about here.
What about other family members? This has come up more than once, John, where somebody said, weren't there aunts or uncles or grandparents or close family friends that recognized that there were problems? What do those people do? It's
right.
That's a tough call, isn't
Although,
it?
Although, do they listen? Because I believe the foster parent is a cousin
yeah.
of the mom, so
yeah.
it is a family member. And if they said something, the mom was saying she was unfit to be a parent, but that parent just said, oh, shut up. What can
right.
you do?
Right, right. No, I think it's probably time for a shift in this part of the formula as well, right? So there are other adults that are exposed to these kids, oftentimes aunts and uncles, and sometimes I think in that position we tend to think, well, this is not my business, I shouldn't get over involved,
right?
And I think more of us might be, in order to honor AJ's life, if nothing else, more of us can consider, like, if you see something, say something.
Yeah.
You know, like, so if you see the bruises and you see the skittish behavior and you see the abuse overtly, which, you know, I think a lot of aunts and uncles and friends do, that you don't let that pass any longer, that we actually
right.
say something. And if you ever talk to anybody at DCFS, they say, we'd rather hear from you and have you over-report than not hear from you.
Yeah.
You know, so my bias would be, even if you feel like you're doing a disservice to your brother or your sister because this is their child,
do it anyway.
Yeah, your duties to the child.
Yeah.
Podcast
sense.
Called Better, a book, The Available Parent, a new book coming out soon, huh?
Yes. Yeah.
All right, keep us posted on that. In the meantime, where can people reach you and find out what you have going on?
Yeah, so you should be able to find anything I'm involved with at my website at drjohnduffy.com.
Thanks, John.
Thank you,
really
guys.
Appreciate it. A break and then some news and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Thank you, Eric. It is Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder, and we celebrate a lot of special days in the world. There was Record Store Day today.
Charles Nelson Reilly's birthday, Wendy, was a big one. We had a two-day celebration for that.
Today is May Day. May Day, May Day. And
where we just give up. We just flat out give up.
And coming up Saturday is Free Comic Book Day, and this... let's find out all about it. I want to know when it started. Carmelo Chimera is with us, owner of Chimera's Comics in Oak Lawn and LaGrange. I go to the LaGrange one all the time. How are you, Carmelo?
I'm great. Thank you, Wendy. How are you?
Great. When did this Free Comic Book Day start?
You know, it was probably like 13 when it started. It's been on for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is like the 12th or 13th year or something like that they've done it. And I remember the first year going into a local shop and the owner hadn't even heard of Free Comic Book Day. He's like, I don't really do anything with that. And now that would be unheard of.
Yeah.
Right.
Our year revolves around Free Comic Book Day.
Yeah. So the idea behind it was the industry just kind of giving back? Is that what it was? What was the idea behind it?
Well, I think it's the classic, like, first one's free kind of marketing idea. And I think originally the publishing companies also didn't take it super seriously, because that first year the comics were all like reprints, and now they get it. The comics that come out are
special editions.
They're
stuff.
Special. They're made just for Free Comic
yeah.
Book Day. In a lot of cases, if they have a big series coming out, they'll make the zero issue or like the prologue issue a Free Comic Book Day book to get people to want to come out for that. So everybody along the chain takes a hit to make this happen, right? The,
yeah.
the publisher makes them cheaper, the distributor makes them available to me cheaper, and then I pay for them
yeah.
And then give them away. So we've all sort of participated.
But it means repeat business. People read it. They like what they read. They come back and get some more. Right?
Yeah, I mean, that's the hope, is that it's a chance to get excited about stuff, discover new stuff. And I think the other thing about it is it's an excuse. I think a lot of people like comic books and they mm-hmm. want to read more, but like your day is busy. Your day is full of distraction. Here's a chance to like take some time out, go do something for yourself, get a treat, and then, you know, maybe that sparks an interest.
Mm-hmm.
I have to admit that I love comic books, and it, my love of comic books began with Archie.
Nice.
I really liked that. Lil Jinx.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got into the X-Files. I have all the X-Files. And now that you're here, Carmelo, I want to go in our basement. I put them in bags with boards, and they're in my own white box, and I'm going to go reread them.
That's
I mean,
awesome.
You can come back to a comic book, right?
Oh, yeah. There are some comics in my collection where anytime I'm reorganizing or something, if I happen upon it, I actually stop what I'm doing and read it. Oh, this is a really good one. I need to read it again.
Should they rename the X-Files comics the Mulder Reports? Would that be a better name?
Oh, that's good. I like that.
All right. Man. Last time we had you up, you were giving away one of your comic book stores.
That's correct.
That was the one in...
That was Free Comic Book Store Day.
Free Comic
right?
Book Store Day.
Come on
I
in, get a free comic book store.
Oh, you're my new marketing director.
I'm there for you.
I like that.
All right, that was the Oak Lawn one?
Yes, the Oak Lawn store, that's right.
But now you still have it.
I do still have it. We're I'm going to announce the winner of the comic shop this Saturday at Free Comic Book Day.
So, oh, nice.
1 o'clock on Saturday, and I'll live stream it. And
do the finalists know that the announcement's going to be made and they can be there for it, or is that not the way it's being handled?
So this is the first time I've said publicly that I'll announce the winner on
Oh,
Saturday.
All right.
And, but the people involved know
they
that's,
do.
That's going to happen. So,
oh, my God, this is so exciting.
That's excellent.
Yeah.
So remind us, because we had you on several months ago talking about this, what goes on behind this? You have other shops. You just decided.
Sure, yeah. So I'm involved in so many things. I'm a full-time practicing attorney.
Yeah.
I have two stores and have recently moved into publishing, which we talked about. Mm-hmm. In fact, in the last time since I've seen you, I even launched another company with a monthly subscription box, that like a delivery box, like a loot crate.
Yeah.
I call it Comic Shop in a Box.
Which we subscribe to. My 16-year-old son said, you got to do it, Mom.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Really, I really believe in that idea. And it's been super successful. And so I just wanted to dial back what I'm doing.
Sure.
Because I think I can do a better job if I do less stuff. And so I happened on the short version, happened on the idea to give the store away instead of the more traditional way of selling it or whatever, which is ironic because I'm in mergers and acquisitions. So I do that all day, and I may have just undermined the entire M&A industry.
Maybe,
I'd love to do a TED Talk on that. So then I decided to do the giveaway. That blew up. 720 people entered by the time
really?
The contest was done. Yeah, that's right.
That's outstanding. And what was your criteria for deciding who the winner will eventually be? What were you looking for?
So they had to answer an essay question, what makes a great comic book store? And I was looking for like creativity. I was looking for passion and work ethic. And then as I read them, a new theme kind of emerged. I didn't know the answer to my question. I was hoping to find the answer to my question. And there were a couple essays that I just couldn't get away from. They just stuck with me. I started to notice that things like inclusivity and things like reaching out to young people and cooperating with libraries and schools, those were the essays that started really sticking with me. And they started really kind of making me think, this is what I should have been doing if I had had more time to devote to
right.
it. And from that, I sort of was able to divine the winner or winners.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
Oh. Yeah, now, twist ending to this story, I promise.
You can find Chimera's Comics in Oak Lawn and in LaGrange. And now, which one are you having the midnight opening?
We're going to do the midnight opening at the Oak Lawn store.
And what is the advantage of going to Free Comic Book Day at midnight Friday into Saturday? What are the benefits?
Besides hanging out with me.
Besides, yes.
Well, during the day for Free Comic Book Day, just because of demand, we have to limit 3 free comics per person.
Oh.
But at midnight, there's no limit.
You can
have a limited amount, up to one of each title. And I'm going to have food and music and kind of make a party out of it. I'll have special offers available only at midnight. But, you know, and for a lot of people, it's the excitement of dibs, right?
Yeah.
There are people who are going to spend their Saturday, you know, doing a comic shop crawl and visiting every shop they can, because a lot of them do have those restrictions. So, like, oh, I'll get my three here, I'll get five here, and I'll get them all. So that's what a great way to get a head start on your crawl.
Oh, absolutely.
Come at midnight, knock one out early.
Yeah, very, very good. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll discuss this further in just a little bit.
All right, it is Free Comic Book Day. It is coming up on Saturday, and a place you should definitely start your journey is at Chimera's Comics. The one in Oak Lawn will have a special midnight opening. First dibs. You can have a party. I'm just reading. No limit. Party with us. Special offers and grand finale. And the grand finale, Carmelo Chimera, is you're going to...
It's the end of our comic shop giveaway. This will probably be the last event we have before the transition to the new ownership. You might recall I've given the store away in a contest, and I'm going to announce that winner on Saturday at the store. So,
are you a little sad?
You are, aren't you? I can tell you are.
I am.
It's emotional.
It's very emotional. This is like my life's work in a lot of ways. But it's you know, it was kind of like seeing Avengers this weekend. It was an ending, but it's also the beginning of a new era. And
yeah.
So, you know, so you kind of reflect on where you've been. And
a texter wants to know, by the way, Carmelo, what impact that movie, for people who don't know, the movie just broke box office records. More people saw it on the first day than any other movie in history. So what is the impact that has on comic book stores?
You know, it does help, and people do come in now knowing about characters they've never heard of before. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, 10 years ago, I couldn't have sold an Ant-Man comic to save my life.
Right.
And now I can't keep Ant-Man on the shelf, right? And that helps a lot. I think one thing, though, there's a sense amongst comic shop owners that the movies and the people behind them don't really do enough to drive that to comic book stores. And that's a problem, not for us, but for the industry, because this is the source material. And if the sources dry up, then so will the movies. So even if it was just as simple as like Robert Downey Jr. saying, go visit your local comic shop, that would be huge.
Sure.
So we kind of wish we had seen something like that, but certainly very grateful to all the actors and the writers and producers who made those movies, because for us, it's a dream come true.
For everybody who says the movie's great, but if you're into the world of comics, there's all kinds of little extra added bonuses. You found all those little extra added bonuses, didn't you?
Well, I like to think I found a lot of them. It's a 3-hour movie, so I need to see it again. Like, it was a lot of movie.
Sure.
And at the end, I felt kind of like bedazzled. But there are definitely those things that if you love the comics, there's moments in the movie for you that really pay off. And, you know, I hope people who aren't familiar with the comics will check them out and maybe get a new appreciation for these movies.
Good.
I still have to see the last one.
Yeah.
And then I am going to try and do it within the next couple weeks. I'm surprised spoilers haven't been all over the place.
Yeah, it has. I mean, I'm doing the same thing. I haven't seen it yet. So I'm careful on every single story I look at everywhere so that they're not telling me too much.
Although you know how Game of Thrones is going, don't you?
Do.
They've spoiled that in a second.
I do, kind of.
Yeah, we all got got together and we decided we're only going to spoil Game of Thrones.
Right.
We'll protect Avengers. It was like this unwritten agreement amongst nerds. And I don't know where we came up with that, but we did.
Strange. Very, very strange. I'm holding in my hand a book called Magnificent, Carmelo. What can you tell me about this book I'm holding?
That's my baby. It took me 9 years to make Magnificent. I wrote it, and with the help of my store's community, we crowdfunded it on Kickstarter. It came out last year. It's a story about a Chicago superhero's journey before and after a disaster that changes the world. I'm super proud of it. I brought it for you guys to enjoy. I hope you get a chance to read it and share it with people. It's a story really about staying true to yourself, you know, as you grow up. And the older I got, the more that story made sense to me. So that's why I never stopped after 9 years, never gave up on Magnificent because of that.
How good is it to see it in physical form? I mean, it's been in your head for all those years, and here it is. It's a real thing, and like I told you, I hope you take this as a compliment. This is a real book. You're not goofing around with this.
No, you're right, and I do take it as a compliment because, you know, you can't make a story that everyone in the universe will love, but you can make a product that everyone can look at and say, yes, that is a legitimate, high-quality product, and I think Magnificent is. When I first opened the box and pulled out that first copy, I thought I was going to cry, but I just sat silently for like 10 minutes and just I could not believe that I like willed this thing into existence. So
it's good. Beautiful.
Yeah,
isn't the artwork
nicely
beautiful?
So
I cannot
nice.
Wait to read it, and it's a hardcover. I love these graphic novels.
Well, I appreciate that, and I thanks very much. I hope you enjoy it.
Do you have dreams that somebody's going to call you up and say, hey, we read what you wrote. This would be a pretty good movie. Is that your next dream?
You know, I've thought about it, and I'd love to go that route. I'm more focused on, like, that's like step 10. I'm focused on step, like, 3 or 4 now, which is the prequel to this book that I'm working on. And that one's going to be pretty extraordinary, and it's going to blow this one out of the water, I think. And frankly, that's kind of where I see going into like a TV show or a movie or something, because that one's a little bit more grounded.
Well, good. Yeah. Keep it up. That's fantastic.
Have fun on Free Comic Book Day.
Thanks very much. I hope you guys can come out and get some free comics, too.
Where's the best website to tell people? Or I know you're on Facebook and Twitter and Insta as well, but where should people go to find out more?
ChimerasComics.com. C-H-I-M-E-R-A-S comics.com.
There was a quick text, and I want to get to it because I'm not sure of the answer. Yeah. They're unclear on whether or not you're getting the same books at different stores. Like you mentioned, some people will be going from comic book store to comic book store. Are the same free comics available at all stores, or does that vary from place to place?
Yeah, I guess a great question. Short answer is yes, they're all the same, but there were a lot available from various publishers.
Yeah.
And so some of the more obscure ones, not every store is going to have.
Yeah.
And if they do, they're going to have them in lower quantities, and you may find that they're out of them. So in that sense, it behooves you to visit multiple stores in that, you know, but there's a selection of them that's available.
You can tell he's an attorney. He said behooves you.
Right.
Why did I use that word? As soon as it left my lips, I was like, son of a gun.
And it's also May the 4th, Star Wars fan pointed out. Will there be any Star Wars comic deals on May the 4th?
My manager at the LaGrange store has some Star Wars specials planned for us.
My husband will be there.
So please come by. Also, a possibility we'll have some stormtroopers there to keep the peace. Not sure on them yet, but...
I saw a comic book that has Alicia Ocasio-Cortez as the star of the comic. Have you seen this?
I have seen this, yes. I eagerly...
Really? She's fighting crime, yeah.
Yep, yep. It's like a thing of our generation. Just like, put capes on everybody.
Right.
Do you buy old comic books, someone wants to know?
Yeah, we do from time to time, but I think we find that a lot of folks... You know, they think their comic book collection is worth a lot of money, and the truth is only really after a certain era. You know, when people were buying comics in the 90s, it was a speculator market, and the bubble burst. So
I have a bunch of Superman ones and Batman ones. I should just throw those away, right? Those aren't worth anything.
No, you should give them to me.
You want them, Wendy?
Yeah, I'll take care of them for you.
I'll bring them to you.
I mean, if you're just going to throw them out, I'll
then you'll take them. Yeah. All right. Well, thank
spell
you
the name
that.
Of the comic book shop again, please.
C H I M E R A S. Comics.
You nailed it. You just won a comic book store.
I'm a good speller. Really good.
We'll see you. We go to the LaGrange location, but also Oaklawn, Midnight. Both Chimera's locations will be celebrating Free Comic Book Day. Carmelo, Chimera, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Carmelo. Appreciate it.